Hour number two of 3D rolling right along here in Kitchen Notes at the Downtown Omni Hotel. Darren, Derek, and Donick with you every day 10 to 2, SEC Media Days here in our fine city. Men's side today, women tomorrow. We'll have SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey in just a bit this hour. But right now we are joined by Bryce Drew, Vanderbilt head men's basketball coach. He's at our table in Kitchen Notes. I don't know if he came for the food or for good conversation or both. Coach, how you doing? Good morning.
I'm doing good. Walking down here, I was just thinking how you guys got the best gig around. You get to set up shop in great restaurants like this, eat, talk on the radio, eat
it's
a little bit
bad.
More. Not a bad gig.
You get to wear a nice sweater like Willie.
I can think of worse options, yes. Good point. So we had this discussion in the first hour of the show, and we said we would table it until you got here to ask a coach. You have a really talented player, but unfortunately you've figured out he doesn't really fit what you're doing. What do you do?
Or give him the reference.
Okay,
he used to play for the Rockets. The Houston Rockets now have Chris Paul, and we were talking about trying to work him into.
I get home last night from the Predators game, and I can't go to sleep. Mm-hmm. So I'm watching the end to the Rockets and the Warriors. I'm watching the fourth quarter. And my observation is Chris Paul is a square peg with the Rockets. He doesn't fit what they're doing. And I don't see James Harden changing, and I certainly don't see their coach changing what he does. So you have a talented player in Chris Paul, but my observation, my eyes, says he doesn't fit what the Rockets are doing. I know it's game one of 81 more to go.
Yep.
But what do you do as a coach? How do you handle that?
You know, I think a couple things that I would consider. First is you try not to put yourself in those situations, obviously, if that's going to happen. The next part is you try to the best you can to make it work and to make it where it's not that way. I can give you an example. My first year in the NBA, I was with Houston, and they had Charles Barkley and Hakeem Olajuwon, and the whole offense went through them. In that offseason, they signed Scottie Pippen, so now Scottie Pippen came in. And when the three of them played together, the flow was not near when only two were out on the court together. And so to answer your question, to go back, try to tweak your offense, tweak it, and then maybe do your substitutions in a way that you always have one on the floor, so at least so many minutes, you know, Chris gets to do his thing, and then obviously James is going to do his thing. So, you know, I think there's ways to get around it, but again, if it just doesn't work, then they're going to have to make a trade.
You always hear the reference, oh, they don't have enough basketballs to go around for everybody. When you hear that means people are referencing saying you have a lot of talent. Is that a good problem to have as a coach, or is that a bad problem?
It can go
or a headache.
It can go both ways. I think if your talent is in different positions and they do different things well, then I think it's obviously really, really good. If you got the same player or if you got three guys that need the ball in their hands, then it's probably not going to work as well. And so, again, I think it's fitting those pieces together. You know, obviously, you look at Chris Paul, since we're using this example, you know, he's best with the ball in his hands, making decisions, making plays. James Harden is best with the ball in his hands. So somehow you got to have an offense where those two have the balls in their hands and everyone else is catching and shooting or finishing alley-oop dunks.
What did you learn playing or coaching in this conference last season?
Learned that it's a very fast league, you know, at all the positions, very fast. And a lot more jump defenses than I thought. You know,
it was faster than when Willie played.
Willie,
what are you trying to say?
You're saying the game. But I like the D-base is just cracking up over that example.
They're still playing half court basketball.
Well, of course, he was wearing Chuck Taylor's.
Exactly.
Yeah, we did like to work the 45-second shot clock. Let's say that.
The shot clock was holding him back. It was holding him back with his speed. If it had been the 30-second clock, just think what would happen.
Different game. We would have picked up the
tempo. No one believes that. But anyway, sorry. The game is definitely about speed today, no doubt. So the game is sped up. So what else did you learn last year in the conference?
There's some junk defenses more than I thought. Out of bounds, under, just different things, matchup zones. You know, I thought there'd be more just flat out pressing and pressuring man to man. But some different looks that you saw. And then, you know, you hear that there's good players in the league, but until you see them in person, you don't realize how good, you know, everyone is. And
kind of like the show. When you sit down with us, you're like, wow, a lot more talent than I thought.
And well, much more well-dressed than you envisioned, you know, than when you're listening on the air. But we have more top 100 recruits coming to our league than any other league in the country, and we have more lottery picks projected next year than the other league. So good players usually result in better basketball.
Now, how do you replace a guy like Luke? The last couple of seasons, you know, each year you've had to, not necessarily you, but the team had to replace some guys that they really counted on. This year for you, one of the biggest guys was Luke. How do you replace him?
I don't think that we can do it with one guy, so it's going to have to be a lot of pieces that come in and try to fit, you know, fill some of the stat sheets that he did for us. So we're different this year. Luke was very unique. He spaced the floor, but he also could block shots. You know, this year we have not as skilled as centers that can't step out and really make threes. So they're going to have to do it in other ways. They're going to have to make up for it with rebounding, being physical, getting up and down the court, you know, faster, getting some tip-ins here and there. And so we're going to be different at that position, but we're going to have to do it collectively, not just one person.
We're talking with Bryce Drew, Vanderbilt's head basketball coach, men's basketball coach. So what you're saying is, Coach, is that it's more of a small ball type of mentality, getting up and down the court, not having that 6'11", 7-footer that can step out and shoot threes or go in the middle and dominate.
And so our centers, we're going to really move them around a lot this year, you'll see. You know, they're going to be flying down the court and flying side to side and trying to get guys open. And so it'll be a little bit different role also for our players because they're used to having a lot of space and having a, you know, a five-man that could really stretch the defense and shoot three. So it'll be different for them because their angles are going to be a little bit different and the paint might at times be a little more crowded because there is going to be, you know, someone down there.
Now, how has Matthew Fisher Davis come back? Obviously, what happened last year in the tournament, the foul at the end of the game. And, you know, I'm pretty sure he felt horrible. Bad, you know, worse than anybody else could possibly feel. I mean, even the fans. How has he come back this season?
You know, a play like that, just in my history being in athletics, you know, it can go, you know, one of two ways. It can, you know, really sink you that you never recover from, or it can make you a lot better. And from what I've seen in the spring and in the summer, so far in the fall, it's really motivated him to want to work harder and want to be a better player. So as a coach, you know, we're really excited about the potential of the year that he could have, but really proud of him that he's chosen the motivation side and used it as great motivation.
Vanderbilt basketball coach Bryce Drew is with us now. Coach, you had a chance to take your team and play some games. Before we talk about what happened when you were there at developing, I know you were into the Virgin Islands, and it had to hit you guys hard when you were seeing that hurricane go through there. I can only imagine what that was like. The area that you were there, I mean, how are they doing down there?
Yeah, extremely sad. People were tremendous down there, really friendly. We got to see a lot of the island. We did tours at history, you know, all types of things down there. And then pretty much to look at it on TV and not even recognize it and hear some of the stories that were coming out of there. You know, we're one of the last groups to probably see it how it was, you know, for a long, long time. And great people down there, and just our hearts are with them.
Yeah, it's hard when you get to know people down there, and then it probably connects you a lot more when you're seeing all those pictures on TV. Tim Duncan, maybe the most famous basketball player from the Virgin Islands. I know he's doing a lot to try to get some help down there.
And you know, people have been sensational. You know, we're going to do some stuff to help with hopefully a charity game. You know, hopefully we're working on, and we can send some of that relief down to help people out.
Well, you were talking about how you have to evolve a little bit without a unique player like Luke Kornet. It had to help that you could get the guys together in the offseason and go play some games.
It did. You know, we got to see some stuff that we liked, some stuff we could build off of. And then we got to see some stuff that we didn't think we did very well, and we kind of just scratched it and left it in the Virgin Islands down there when we got back on the plane. And so it gave us a chance to be able to experiment a little bit. We've played a lot of guys. So down there we played, 12 guys nearly every game. And so we had a lot of different combinations, so it was hard to get, you know, a great feel for each other. And, you know, that'll be one of, I think our struggles at the beginning of the season is finding which, you know, 8 or 9 guys or 10 we're going to play because we feel good with everybody that they can help us out on the court.
You got a vast array of guys. You've got a couple guys sitting out that'll be eligible later. You're signing guys that you've been recruiting personally. But you also have some veteran guys.
Yep.
You have a pretty much a senior-laden team, and I know you're going to lean on those guys pretty heavily.
Definitely. Just naturally, they've been through it. They know it. They get it. They understand it. And they feel very comfortable, you know, in those roles, having more on their shoulders. So we'll definitely look, you know, for Riley Chance, Jeff Roberson, and Matthew Fisher-Davis to take a bigger even responsibility this year. And as the year progresses, hopefully our younger guys will be able to keep growing and start playing a lot more mature for freshmen.
What was it like coaching Riley Lachance? He's such a unique player, and I think a lot of the fans that watch him, when you first see him, you're like, wait, can this guy? How does this guy get it done in this league? But when you watch him game in and game out, he's a special player.
You know, he has to be a step ahead on things because with his size and with his length, you know, he's not as gifted as other athletes he plays against, and he does a great job at watching film, a great job at preparing. So when he gets in those situations, he'll take what the defense gives him, and he has a great feel for making plays. And you got to credit him for the hard work he puts in because he's in before practice, after practice, you know, trying to master his craft.
And another guy that I think is pretty unique is Jeff Roberson because he's not – I mean, he's sort of undersized for the position he plays, but he adapts his game. He can do so many different things out there.
He does, and he's had a great preseason so far. You know, we wish he was just a couple inches taller because we could play him at some five. But he does so much for us, and right now he's our best scorer in the post. And, you know, we feel like you need to have a post presence at some point in the game. So, you know, we might be using him down in the post a little bit to hopefully be able to get us some baskets.
And the Brady Bunch, they hang, you know, they would hang from the monkey bars. It didn't work, but, you know, maybe you could try something to throw an inch or two. Have the players changed today as opposed to when you played? How different is today's athlete, or is it?
Boy, you know, I was really thinking about this with Gordon Hayward. I don't know if you guys.
D-Mace was there.
Yeah, it was.
Oh, you were there.
It was nasty. Yeah.
So I've known Gordon since he was, you know, at Butler, and we played against him. And it seems I don't remember those injuries happening that much a long time ago. And I don't know if because the athletes are so explosive now and the game's much faster. You know, you had Paul George a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. You had the Louisville player a few years before
Kevin
that.
Kevin Ware.
I mean, I just don't remember those happening. And now you're seeing it, you know, those injuries happen. And to answer your story, I think the game's just faster. You know, I think players are more athletic. They're stronger. They're quicker. They're more explosive. And you know, I don't know if that's resulting in more injuries or what, but it's definitely a faster game than you know, when I was playing.
Do you, and this is just I'm just throwing this out, something crazy I was just thinking of as you were going over how bigger, stronger, faster these players are getting. And then you look at the court and you say, well, the court really is not adapted to the way these athletes are nowadays. You look at the, you know, the corners of the 3-point line.
Yeah.
They're so short that these guys get on at that corner and they almost got to watch where they're stepping. Should they make the courts a little bit wider just because of the athlete nowadays?
You know, it's a great point, and I can tell you from my experience when I was in college and I went to the NBA. The college game was a lot more physical, I thought, and a lot more crowded. In the NBA, there's just more space. You could run through the lane. You could do different things because it's spread out more. And so I know we've talked about getting the lane a little bit bigger. If you did, it definitely would open up, I think, a little bit, you know, for driving and more penetrating. When you do that, though, I think the 3-point line is the ultimate spacer because that's where people spot up. And the deeper you spot, the more it spaces the floor. Mm.
What goes through your mind as we wrap this up whenever you see some of the stories that have come out here lately? College basketball, not in a great light, but obviously people you've dealt with, you've been in all these circles for a long time, and you hear this stuff come out, kind of what's going on right now, FBI involved. What do you think whenever you've seen this?
You know, it's really unfortunate, you know, all this stuff has come out, and, you know, being in the profession, you know, it saddens you because – again, you want your profession to be thought of in a good light by everybody. As a basketball fan, you know, it makes me sad because I grew up, you know, loving, I love college basketball, but knowing the people that are in the business, knowing the people that are around the business, you know, I truly feel that our sport will be stronger than ever, coming out of this. And I think, you know, the people, will rise and help make it even better.
Could be better moving forward.
Yeah. No doubt.
Good stuff. Hey, thanks for stopping by. Always good to talk to you.
Great talking to you guys. Thanks.
When's everything kick off?
We're going to kick off November, I believe it's 9th, 10th. We got Austin Peay.
This is the third week in October. So it's just around the corner.
It's coming quick, really quickly.
Good to see you. Thanks for doing this.
Thanks, guys.
Bryce Drew, Vanderbilt head men's basketball coach. We appreciate him stopping by the table. When we come back, SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey will stop by. You're listening to 3D, 102.5 The Game. Our coverage rolling right along here at Kitchen Notes, downtown Omni Hotel. Darren McFarland, Derek Mason, Willie Donick alongside. Good conversation we just had with Bryce Drew, Vanderbilt head men's basketball coach. The men today for Basketball Media Days and the women tomorrow. And we're always excited when this event is in our city. SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey, always good to catch up with him. He's been nice enough to stop by. I don't know if it was for the food or for us or for both. Commissioner, good morning. How you doing?
It's you, because I walked right by the food. Although I'm hopeful on the way out, maybe we can do something about that.
Did you get to sneak into Bridgestone last night?
I did.
Catch a little hockey game?
I did, yeah. In fact, I thought I'd be there early. Got caught in a little bit of traffic, yeah. So I was there for the drop of the puck. Got to visit with my friend Sean Henry between periods, first and second period. Watched a little bit in the Lexus Lounge, which is a good
not a bad place
to watch in the stands. It was nice to actually be in the building for a win. I came twice during the playoffs.
Yeah, we talked about
that. It was the only time they lost. I changed pullover, so I got a pullover. I bought a new pullover. That one's undefeated.
All right.
We'll bring that one back.
Yeah, not a bad Tuesday night atmosphere in October for a hockey game last night. It was rocking.
It was, and I actually sent a group of our staff here a week ago. If you go back to May and June, watching the fan engagement, the fan participation, the video presentations, the way the displays were projected on the ice to open the game, just everything about the atmosphere. We had our staff come up to a game last week, and then Sean and his staff were kind enough to invite them in and just spent the entire morning talking through how they build an event, what they do from a video standpoint, how the hockey game's presented. And, you know, I think that's a learning experience for us. I walked out of the Stanley Cup playoff game thinking about our move of our football championship game into Mercedes-Benz Stadium, where they have this huge video board, and wanting our staff to learn from this video staff and learn from others how we can just activate in a really exciting way. So they've been great to work with here, the Predators folks.
That's interesting that you bring that up. Willie and I were fortunate enough to travel with them throughout the whole playoff run last year to the Stanley Cup Finals. So we got to experience Chicago and St. Louis and Anaheim and Pittsburgh. And the one thing that really jumps out, and this is not even just a hockey related, you know, this is sports. We live in a culture, one, it's harder to get people to come to your place anymore, your building, whether it's a football stadium, a basketball arena, a hockey arena. Two, get there early, get there on time. The Predators have done such a good job of, as you've seen, people, unless you're stuck in traffic, people are there. They're not only in the building, they're in their seats 15 minutes before the drop of the puck. They go through the whole thing, the anthem, the skate, everything. Everybody's there where, you know, most places it's a late, if they're going to be there sometimes, most of the time, it's a late arriving crowd. That kind of goes back to what you're saying, the videos, the presentation, things they do before the drop of the puck.
Yeah, and we have this phrase, fan engagement, which is how do you make the fans in a way part of all that's happening. You know, a game is going to happen on the ice or on the field or on the court, but the idea that was there 20 years ago that just sitting in dead air is okay, that's culturally moved beyond. And we're attentive to that. Our campuses have been attentive to that. When you read about the schools putting in video boards, it's not just so that they can say, I've got the biggest video board. It's because that's a piece of the game experience. And we know that people are choosing between staying home and watching on an 80-inch big screen TV or being a part of the atmosphere. And what they've done in Bridgestone is create an atmosphere that people really want to be a part of. And it was fascinating last year that people didn't just want to be a part of the atmosphere in the arena. They just wanted to be a part of the atmosphere in Nashville during that playoff run. And that started early. I think I came during the Anaheim series and then was back for a Stanley Cup game. And, you know, it just built.
Yeah.
And I think they were really intentional and strategic about building that. And it's great to see that it's now rolled over into the next season. And hopefully from a competitive standpoint, they'll see some success from that as well.
SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey at our table. We were down in Hoover for football media days doing our show all week. Obviously a different animal that environment to this environment. But do you feel like this is basketball is getting better? The coverage, people, the interest level? Because you know that's been one of your challenges.
Yeah, and it's been a bit of a chicken and an egg analysis. You know, people want to follow winners, winning programs. They want to follow great competition. We've obviously had that in football, so it drives that energy. And I think we are seeing that in basketball. You know, we're in the Omni. Last year we were in the Arena. They've got plenty to do over there. But I think the interest is there because of what happened in our men's basketball last season and around our women's basketball last season. We had five teams in the NCAA tournament. Last year when we were sitting here having similar conversations, we come off a year where there were three. Mm-hmm. And if you remember, Vanderbilt went up to Dayton, lost in the first round. Kentucky went the furthest and lost in the second round games. And that's just not the representation we have in any other sport. Well, fast forward this year, on the men's side, we had a Final Four team in South Carolina. That was a great story. We had two teams in Madison Square Garden for the Elite Eight, and then Kentucky playing in Memphis for the Elite Eight. Those are our expectations. And we also had Vanderbilt with the ball and a shot to win the game in that game against Northwestern. And Arkansas, you know, had North Carolina in the second round all but beat and just, you know, wasn't able quite to finish. So that's momentum, and that's what we need. And I think that's created some interest. And, you know, on our women's side, we just happen to have the two teams in the national championship game, which I'm not sure how you do better. And I guess we have the whole Final Four. So we'll identify that for a goal this year.
Now, how excited are you for the men's and the women's? Because if you look at it, like you said, last year we were, you know, it was a few teams. This year coming off of the appearances that each team, you know, the teams had, the SEC had representing the field of 64 men and women, it looked really good for the SEC. And then obviously the women's, you had a champion come out of that. And then the men's, you had, Elite Eight, Final Four. So how excited are you for both?
You want to know the most fun part of my day so far? Uh-huh. First coach I saw is Mike Anderson.
Oh, wow.
Mike's excited about the year. And he said, you can't tell people how good we're going to be.
Uh-huh.
So,
wow.
You know, you don't get that from coaches. But, we got to go out in November and December and win games. Last year, we were close to winning a lot of big games. Mm-hmm. And then when we got to the SEC Big 12 Challenge, we went 5-5, which we started off poorly, and nobody really predicted that. We had some really solid wins then. And I think what you saw is young men growing up on the basketball court. Because when we sat here, I think my most often cited stat is we had the fewest minutes played on our rosters of any comparable conference. Hmm. And those young men grew up. This year, we've got a bunch of returning players. Kentucky's got a bunch of freshmen, so that's kind of the model there. But they're pretty good freshmen.
Honk if you've heard that before.
Yeah.
Seems to be the norm.
And so I there is excitement mm-hmm. because of what happened and because you've seen some growth. And, we didn't have a lot of coaching changes, but what Konzo has done mm-hmm. in a short time at Missouri is great to see. And, you know, he helped some success. Had a successful run in Knoxville and at Cal, so that's a really strong addition. So I'm looking forward to the year, and I have even higher expectations mm-hmm. next year. If you'd asked me where I thought things were headed, I thought we'd be better last year, but not quite what we were. We were better than I anticipated. I thought we'd still be better this year. I really thought next year where our coaches that had come in, Mike White, Rick Barnes, mm-hmm. for example, Bryce Drew, were in their third, fourth year where they'd their players in, people had adjusted to them. That's where I really saw the upside. So it's good to be ahead of schedule, and we just need to keep tracking ahead of schedule.
And this one is sort of a two-part question. One, you answered a little bit about some of the young coaches, what Avery Johnson's been able to do in Alabama, bringing that team back to respectability and them being, winning 19 games, almost 20 games. Talk a little bit about the younger coaches, not necessarily in age, but in experience in the SEC. And then we spoke with Bryce a bit about the athlete changing, bigger, stronger, faster. Is there anything that college basketball can do? We talked about possibly, moving the lanes a little bit, mm-hmm. giving the guys a lot more room to kind of maneuver, making it more of a, guys can drive rather than just sitting out at 3-point.
Yeah, from a coaching standpoint, you've got Will Wade also at LSU added with Konzo this year. And Will added a good run at Tennessee Chattanooga and then at Virginia Commonwealth. And it gets a chance to rebuild. And there's always a lot of enthusiasm in Baton Rouge. And I think what I've heard about him is the amount of work and effort. But then if you go back to our last cycle of incoming coaches, you know, Avery was part of that, Ben Howland, Rick Barnes, those guys going into their third season. So you start to see that program take on their character, you know, their mentality. And that's just an important part of coaching. There's no denying that. But just think about the three guys I identified. You know, Rick's coached in Final Four, you know, has been a bunch of different places, really well-respected. Avery was coached in the NBA, NBA Coach of the Year, has won world championships as a player in the NBA. And, you know, Ben has played in a number of Final Fours and coached at UCLA. I first saw him when he was at Northern Arizona. And they add to what I really think is a very strong group of coaches. And, you know, you've seen programs built, what Andy's done at Ole Miss, what Mark's done at Georgia. He's gotten programs that weren't consistent performers necessarily. Mm-hmm. They're now in the 18, 19, 20, 21 win range. They're in the NCAA tournament. Not the NCAA tournament. What I said last year is we just need some incremental movement. I think like both those programs have that opportunity. And, you know, I've kiddingly said my goal is to have all 14 in the NCAA tournament. That's the objective. And, like, people laugh, which they should, but we did it in softball, so why can't we do it in men's basketball? But, you know, part of it, to the essence of the question is, it's an attractive place to coach. And I don't care what the sport is. And we just had to kind of correct, and you've seen people brought in. So that's encouraging. On the structure of the game, I do think there's a health in the debate. A guy named Dan Leibovitz I hired as associate commissioner. He's on the men's basketball competition committee that looks at those rule changes. Dan coached with John Chaney as an assistant for like 12 years. Then he was a head coach at Hartford. He's coached in the NBA, so he's got a lot of respect among our coaches and nationally. You know, do you widen the lane? Do you change the three-point distance? We've seen some tweaks this year. I think those are all relevant as these bodies have become larger, and they're faster, too. So the court's smaller. A lot of talk about post-play. So I know they just met about a month ago. We'll go through this season and look at the cycle of rules changes. One of the things we're doing doesn't relate to the flow of the game necessarily, but trying to get it more right is collaborative replay. In basketball officiating, we've done it, I think, well in football. And that's one of the adjustments this year. And we're the only ones that will be engaging in that experiment because we think there's an opportunity to just have more frequently correct outcomes as opposed to trying to figure it out on the monitor and the sideline.
We're talking to Commissioner Greg Sankey from the SEC here at SEC Media Day. One thing that I thought was big, and I think we discussed this with you last year, and we really saw it, was the collective scheduling initiative that you guys have been working on for the last couple of years. And I remember down the stretch, we were looking at Vanderbilt with the number one strength of schedule. I think Tennessee was number two for a while. But all of that really helped get teams over the hump. And I kept telling – we had a lot of debates. Vanderbilt, I think, at some point was like 17-15 or 16-14. But I kept saying, I think they can get in. They're going to get in, and they did.
16 losses. First ever 16-loss team to be selected as an at-large team in the NCAA tournament. And that's based on schedule and then winning some key games. I was here when they played Chattanooga, which was a well-thought-of team. And you kind of miss at the end of the year that type of game. And, you know, the turnaround in that type of game and the number of threes that Mr. Cornette hit when it mattered was a big deal. And all of those add to credibility. Winning the SEC Big 12 Challenge game here, that was a big deal. And then they had some success from that point forward. And, you know, credit to Bryce coming in with, you know, not his team, as you think, and a credit to those young men for making that adjustment. But you did see the scheduling progress. And that's where and the outcomes have to follow. So the wins have to follow. And that's where I go back to November and December and say we had a whole lot. There was a day where we lost like five games by 3 points or less to ACC teams. Tennessee at North Carolina was one of those in that maybe weekend. And we were close. And so now we want to kind of take that next step and a few more of those wins and still difficult opponents, that's what puts you in great, great stead in March, which you saw literally play out in Vanderbilt, I think, based on the strength of the opportunities they had to win games in that schedule.
And it's not just one or two teams, right? It's the key is that the entire league
right.
can lift itself up if everybody's challenging themselves non-conference.
Yeah, it goes back to a conversation Mike Slive had to say, you know, guys, this is an ecosystem. The Southeastern Conference, if I can get environmental for a moment, is an ecosystem. We're all contained, and so what one does affects the other. And you're going to have teams that struggle, that are rebuilding. That's just a reality, and you understand that. But what you don't want to do is diminish it down to where in February you're playing an opponent in conference that's 280th in the RPI.
That's a killer. That's, yeah.
And they may be 170th or 150th. Last year we tended all towards the top 100 or just over that line. That's much healthier than where we were the previous years. And scheduling is a part of that. You have to win games as well. And it becomes really important because in conference games, anything can happen. You saw Missouri last year that just did not have a strong record, but they beat some teams. That was a tough team to play. Those guys never quit. And they came here and kept playing a little bit. And that's where what you do in November, December, your scheduling, your wins, really affects everyone.
This may be a tough one for you to answer. I don't know what you said when you were asked about it before, but you know, when the FBI story broke, how do you, as a commissioner, how do you react to that? How do you try to help where things can be helped, and what can you do?
Nobody's asked me yet, so thank you for this opportunity. It's always good to talk about FBI. But, I knew that was coming. It actually happened about 9:15, two Tuesdays ago. And we had just finished a staff meeting, and none of us had any awareness this was taking place. And two of our staff were standing off the side and said, "We need to talk to you." And I said, "Well, there's like five more." And they said, "No, we need to talk to you now." And,
which can't be a good feeling, by the way, as the commissioner.
No, it's you never want this. And we've been clear about people needing to act with integrity. We bring every one of our coaches, head coach, assistant coach, all of our operations people, when you're hired, you come to Birmingham. We have three sessions in a year. You come to one of those three. And a part of the message is I say, you just follow the rules. It's actually not that complicated. It's not a 500-page rule book that you have to wake up if you're a coach with and worry about. It's about 20 pages. And just make the right decisions. And if you don't know what your moral compass is, you better figure it out pretty quickly, because you're going to end up in situations where you have to make decisions and compromising. You know, somebody else knows. And if you think you can keep it secret, I think those investigations and the indictments suggest what I've been telling them, which is that's not the way it works. Why you would make a promise that says between you and me to an 18-year-old is beyond me. So it's disheartening. It is really troubling to see kind of the trafficking in human beings that is described in those indictments. We want this sport, and we want intercollegiate athletics to be run properly. And the fact the FBI is engaged is not something we want. But I said in my statement right after it happened that if they've got resources and tools to get to the root of misbehavior, good for them. And let's find out what's being done wrong, and let's move forward, because this is an important endeavor. It provides opportunities. It provides some entertainment. It provides great competition, and we need to cherish and protect that.
Bryce Drew told us he thinks it can be a good thing, big picture, moving forward.
I look at it that way.
Cleaning up things.
Yeah, I think there are some rough waters ahead, whether it's simply the 10 people indicted and four of those being assistant coaches. And there's obviously been some ripple effects out of that beyond the indictments. The circumstances at Louisville probably being the one that nationally is most publicly out there. But we'll move through that. Let's never forget. Let's learn. Let's change. And let's change in real ways. And let's expect more of ourselves collectively. And when we don't meet those expectations, let's hold people accountable in a real way.
Katy Perry is at Bridgestone Arena tonight. She's been on game day. When game day is at an SEC venue, when are you going to be a guest picker? No. I mean, she's been a guest
picker. I'm like the worst game picker ever, because
our show is not very good.
I'll transfer it from we'll come back to basketball, from like football to basketball. So there was a day when I was going to be a high school basketball coach in like the 80s. I had almost a perfect bracket one year. The 87 Syracuse,
really?
Syracuse, Providence, Indiana, UNLV. That was my Final Four. Someplace nice. In my bedroom in my
So you had Rick Pitino's Providence Friars.
Because I had heard him speak at a coach's clinic, and it was incredible that year. And he talked about Billy Donovan and how Billy had changed. And I lived up in the East as a Syracuse fan, so it played out. And fast forward now, like, I know people, and, okay, I don't like them. And, like, if two SEC teams, like Florida and South Carolina, I eventually had to pick. I won't tell you who I pick, but everybody else, goes right to the Final Four.
So you pick with your heart, and it gets
I pick with my paycheck, I guess. Not in a bad kind of way, but, yeah, I pick with my bias lenses completely on. So it used to be I beat my wife. Don't take that clip. I'd be more successful in picking a bracket than my wife and my two daughters. And I haven't won one of those in like 3 years, which is embarrassing.
Well, we're glad when the SEC is always in our fine city. So good to see you. Thanks for having these events here. And hopefully we'll keep doing this.
It's always good to be here. Looking forward to our women's tournament being here this year. Men popped to St. Louis, but it's that continuity. And I talked to Sean about how special this relationship has been. The Predators have been great. Scott Ramsey and the city and the CVB, although I think it's got a little bit different name. I mean, I've never made a bad trip to Nashville.
Well, they're building a lot of buildings, so.
Oh, it's incredible. SEC, yeah, people tweet about me. Yeah, just get that right on Twitter
here.
Right now.
A lot of buildings.
Right now I have a lease.
Thanks for doing this. Good seeing you.
Yep, good to see you guys. Appreciate you.
SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey, always good to catch up with him. We'll come back and wrap up hour number two of 3D. Tim Hasselbeck to kick off the third hour. It's all next on 102.5 The Game.
We are back here on 3D. We're coming at you from Kitchen Notes. And right now, Darren McFarland making the very critical decision awesome menu that they have here.
I am going to try the chicken pot pie for the first time at Kitchen Notes. I've had a lot of things on this menu.
You cannot go wrong.
Chicken pot pie. Learned. It was sold to me during the break. I liked what I heard, and I'm going to go for it.
All right.
I'm going to do it.
There you go. You got it.
D-Mace.
D-Mace is...
Have you made your decision yet?
I haven't made my decision just yet, but the fried green tomatoes look so good.
Ooh.
Yeah, so I might just get me a little fried green tomatoes.
The pimento grilled cheese, we've had that before. That's
strong.
Good stuff.
I think we had those when the eclipse was here. Remember we were here for the eclipse?
Well, we had a lot of things.
We had
the day the
feast.
Eclipse was here, yes. Including our glasses. We didn't eat those.
Oh, my gosh. What about the milkshakes that they brought in there?
Oh, the milkshakes.
The moon pie milkshakes or whatever. Woo. Holy cow.
I'm getting hungry just thinking about all that stuff.
Moon pie milkshakes. Mm.
Not what you want to hear as the commissioner. I've got more meetings. No, we need to talk. That's not what you want to hear. By the way, speaking of that, I've seen on Twitter, Rick Pitino is doing his first sit-down. I believe it's with Jay Billis. That is going to air tonight. Scott Van Pelt, SportsCenter. Rick Pitino's first sit-down interview.
Okay, so
what do we think he's going to say? He's going to deny everything. He knew nothing. No knowledge of anything. That's not going to change, right? He's got to stay consistent with that.
I just don't know if I can believe anything he's going to say. I'd love it if he just came clean and said, this system is broken, it's messed up, and we got caught. But I don't know. I don't know if we're going to see
that. I think
Jay Billis is an interesting guy to be doing the interview because you know how he feels about amateurism. He has been hounding the NCAA for years that the rules are messed up, that players should be able to make money, that in other sports – like, for example, some Winter Olympic sports, a lot of Olympic sports, you can make money as an amateur and still compete in the Olympics. So he wants a change in the system. I wonder how much the interview will go in that direction.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll see.
He wants a change in the system.
Tonight, I cannot imagine. I mean, Rick Pitino has not stood up and taken any accountability at all. So I can't imagine that he's going to start now with the sit-down interview, but – I'll be looking for that tonight on SportsCenter.
I mean, what an interview for what? Because there's things he just can't say. He can't talk about because everything's still under investigation. So is it, he figure I do it with Jay Billis and, it won't hit me with the hard questions and, we can kind of, work our way around the hard stuff and I can – you could probably assume he's going to talk about, you know, him getting the rest of his money from Louisville.
Right, because he has now since been fired for cause this week.
So, but how much more can he talk about?
I think there'll be some questions. I can't really talk about that right now.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you're right.
How much money do they owe you? How much money do you think you are owed? Mm-hmm. I don't think we can talk about that.
Yeah.
So I do wonder what can be said. Yeah.
Or is he just doing it just to say he's not sort of high now right now and, you know, give that face of I'm innocent. That I'm innocent face. Can Rick Pitino give that face?
Good question.
Well, he's tried to this point.
Yeah, I guess so.
Has he not? I mean, look, he wants it. They owe him a lot of money.
Oh, yeah. $44 million, something like that. Yeah.
But if you're getting fired for cause, you're basically saying we don't owe you any money.
Yeah.
Well, that's what they're saying. And then he's going to say that, you know, he deserves his money. I'm sure. I doubt he's going away quietly on that front. Why else would he be doing an interview?
He's just not going to walk away from $44 million.
Remember, we had the caller.
I think that's the whole idea, that he walked away with the idea, well, I'm still going to get paid. There's probably going to be a settlement somewhere in there, you would think. Right?
I don't know why if you're Louisville, why would you? I mean, that's the whole point of that being in the contract, is it not?
Yeah.
I mean, isn't that supposed to protect you against things like this?
So how strong?
Why would you settle on something that you have in for these purposes?
I am
unless there were some things that some people knew about up in the big office that they don't want to get out.
Yep, that's a good point.
So he said, okay, we're not going to give you 44, but we give you 22.
And we keep our mouths shut.
Yeah, keep our mouths shut and go about your way.
Just go about our business.
You're saying unless there's more to the story?
Yeah. Hmm. So it'll be interesting to see. I'm going to watch it.
They'll get the eyeballs on the interview.
Oh, of course.
Just people, curiosity will make that happen. But, you know, I don't know what we're going to get out of it. But, yeah, certainly I'm going to check it out for sure.
So is Jay Billis like the foremost basketball guy now? Like, expert sort of?
I mean,
like now you go to?
Who else would you want to do that interview?
I'm just trying to think. I can't
think of anybody. Yeah. That I would want to do the interview more than him, right?
I'm just trying to figure out who would – is there
– I think Rick Pitino will have a lot of respect for Jay Billis.
Yeah.
And I think you're more likely to give a detailed answer, an answer with effort to somebody like Jay Billis.
I think he's the most respected college basketball
analyst out there, right?
Yeah. Well, who would be – when you say right up there, who's in his – is ilk. I mean, who's in that group?
I got to think Clark Kellogg still has a lot of credibility. He's up there in terms of giving the interview.
Yeah, who would be?
That's what I'm talking about. Clark Kellogg, yes, but in this particular setting, I don't know if I would want Clark Kellogg doing this interview. I'd probably like to see Charles Barkley do the interview.
Wow. That's interesting.
Oh, man.
Right?
Charles probably get him to talk. You never know.
That's a really interesting idea,
like,
honestly.
Barkley would be
that's
the one.
Terrible.
Because he might just say that after a Pitino answer.
That's terrible.
That's just terrible, coach.
That's terrible.
Oh, man.
I guess if it's not Jay Billis, that would be my vote. Charles Barkley.
Why not?
Just because, you know, you never know. He's a wild card.
Yeah, you never know.
I was looking at Deadspin. They've got a video. Evidently, Luke Shen and Antoine Roussel got into a fight, and they're calling it the truly stupid hockey fight ever. Like, all they did was sit there and pull on each other's jerseys. You know, look, I know this is not good radio, but that's all they did whole time.
The whole time?
Weird. What are they doing? Is that a new dance?
That's Antoine Roussel.
Yeah.
He usually will throw them.
I know. Well, I think that's the problem. Neither one would let the other one free up their hands.
Man.
So they just basically shook each other till they broke it up.
No, that's bad. That's bad.
We'll come back with Tim Hasselbeck to kick off the third hour of 3D. That's next.